Heard of the Jewish revolt led by Simon Bar Kochba? Well, it happened in the year 132 AD. The Roman Empire decided to crack down upon the Jewish people. And they told them, you can't live in your home city of Jerusalem. You can't live in your home city. Now, for the Jewish people, this was the last straw. They had enough. And so they decided to rise up against the Roman Empire, and Simon Bar Kochba led a revolt. And they united together as one great army, and they crushed the entire Roman legion based in Jerusalem at that time, and all of their auxiliaries, all of their support. And they began to rule in that city, even developing their own coinage that's today known as the Bar Kochba Revolt coinage, which is quite interesting. Now, what makes this event so interesting is that for many of the Jews during that day, this revolt for them was the time when the Messianic Age had arrived. Now, the Messianic Age was the day when God would bless his people, the Jewish people, and they would come and rule their land. And Simeon, well, he was the man to bring it. For many of the leaders, Simeon was the Messiah at the centre of this event. Now, Messiah simply means the anointed one, the chosen one, and it comes to be associated with the king. So during 132 AD, Simeon was the leader, the Messiah of God's people. Now, he was entitled Nazi, which means prince. And they established their own Jewish state, independent of the Romans, but they only had 1 year of peace. For the Romans sent 12 legions to crush this rebellion, almost a half of the Roman army. And crush it they did. They killed 580,000 Jews, destroyed 50 fortified towns, and razed 985 villages. And they killed Simeon, the one who was meant to be the Messiah, the king. So is this the one that the Jews were looking for? Is he the royal Messiah, one who was so comprehensively crushed? Well, we need to answer that question, and that's what we're going to try and do over the next few weeks. We're going to think about who is the royal Messiah that Scripture speaks to us about. And to answer that question, well, we need to turn to the Scriptures, for that is what will provide us the information. And where else can we start but at the beginning? See, in the beginning we know that God is the creator of the world, and as the creator, he is the ruler. He made everything around us and he rules over it. He made us in his image to be his people. But it didn't take long for us to stuff up. See, Adam and Eve, well, we all know the story. They ate that piece of fruit and they rebelled against their rightful ruler, stood against his authority as their king. But thankfully, there is a note of hope. You see, God makes a promise. He makes a promise that after Adam and Eve rebel and the created order descends and plunges into disarray, he promises that there will be a descendant from the woman, from Eve. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, he tells us that there will be a descendant who will crush the head of Satan. And Satan, well, he will only bruise his heel. This descendant, he will come and destroy the evil one. Now this, my friends, is the hope of the Messiah, the one who will come to deliver God's people. We hear this hope right back at the beginning of the world. And we cannot but hope, when will he arrive? Who will he be? What will he do? Well, this is where we need to keep looking, continuing on our journey. And we turn to Abraham. Now Abraham was chosen by God out of all the people on the earth, and God made a covenant or an agreement with him in Genesis chapter 12 verses 1 to 3. And he promises Abraham, he tells him, Abraham, I'm going to make you a great nation. You'll be the father of many descendants. Not only that, but kings will come from you. Kings will come from Father Abraham. Now eventually, Abraham has a child called Isaac, who then has another, Jacob, and Jacob has 12 sons of his own. 12 sons who will form the 12 tribes of this nation, Israel, the great nation that Abraham is to become. But what's of importance to us is that to one of these sons a prophecy was made. A very important prophecy. A prophecy was made to the son of Judah. You know what it says? Well, it tells us that Judah will always rule, that he and his descendants will be kings. He will rule over his brothers, the 11 others, but not only that. Have a look. I'll read it out to you. See if you can tell me who else Judah will rule. It comes from Genesis chapter 9, verse 10. And it says, the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations are his. Can you tell me who it is that Judah will rule over in addition to his brothers? The nations. That's right. In Genesis, we read about this son of Abraham who will come and rule not only among his own brothers, but among the nations, to the ends of the earth. This is a king, one who will come from the tribe of Judah in Israel, with power, with authority. And Genesis also tells us that this is the king through whom God will bring blessings to all the nations of the earth. He will bless them abundantly. And this same passage goes on to talk about what that blessing will be. It'll be as if we had to sit down at a great feast, and there before us is the finest wine, a Grange Hermitage maybe, and the best food, a roast pork glazed in dripping in honey. That's what Genesis speaks of, the blessing that will come to all the nations, a great feast that we can all join in together. What a wonderful picture, this king who is to come. But let us continue. You see, there is more that we need to learn. For the book of Numbers also speaks of a great king to come in Israel. It speaks in chapter 24 of a star that will arise like in the night sky. And he will be a king, and once again he will encounter the nations around. But it'll be a little different this time. Have a listen to what the prophecy says, coming from the seer Balaam. He says in verse 17, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the foreheads of Moab, the skulls of all the sons of Sheth. Edom will be conquered. Seir, his enemy, will be conquered, but Israel will grow strong. And then he finishes, ah, who can live when God does this? Who can live when God does this? You see, the royal Messiah will come, not just bringing blessing to the nations, but also judgment. And you might be sitting there thinking, well, what does Edom and Seir have to do with me? I mean, they're a long time ago, those nations. But let me tell you, those nations were the forerunners of the great multitude who would advance against this king to destroy him. And today, well, that includes all the nations that we know of, Australia, Western nations like the US, Asian nations like China, all advancing against God's king. But a day is coming when he will destroy such nations. He will cleanse God's house of all evil and all who stands against him. And God's judgment, it will be known on this earth, and there will be no escape. So here it is, the beginning of the Bible, the picture of the royal Messiah. Can you envisage him in your mind? The one who comes to crush the head of the serpent, descended from Abraham, raised up from Israel, the one who would bring blessing to those who come to him from the nations and submit in obedience, and the one who will bring judgment who stand opposed to him as his adversaries. This is the royal Messiah. We live in a world that's obsessed with the idea of a Messiah. It doesn't take much to think of examples. One that popped to my mind was the popular movie The Matrix. Many of you might have seen it. It's a great movie, really enjoyed it. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to give it a go. I'll probably ruin it for you now, but you can watch it anyway. It's a great movie. Now, in The Matrix, humanity lives in a world that's ravaged by war with machines. And humanity is descended to the depths of the earth to live near the earth's core. But there's hope. You see, there's a prophecy that's been given to the last remnants of man, a prophecy that a Messiah will come and lead them in their war with the machines. And a few people amongst this remaining group have dedicated themselves to finding this Messiah. They travel in ships with this hope pumping through their veins. And eventually, they find them. One of the main characters, a man called Morpheus, well, he finds the Messiah, Keanu Reeves in the movie. And he is so dedicated to this cause, he even endures torture and death. As his life slips from his hands, he remains completely calm because he looks at his Messiah in front of him and he knows that all is well. That's the sort of hope that dwelled in the hearts of these people. But let me ask you, is that the sort of hope that dwells in your heart for the Messiah? Does it pump through your veins for this king to come? Because let me tell you, my brothers and sisters, this is no fairy tale. This is no story. This is flesh and blood. This is where our future is heading. There is no doubt about it. So do you long for the Messiah? Is he the one that you seek? Well, let's have a look at the nation of Israel. Let's have a look at how they respond to the hope of a royal Messiah. Eventually, Abraham's descendants become a great nation. And God gives them a land of their own, the land of Canaan, which they go in and they live and they dwell and they prosper. But it doesn't take long for the Israelites to turn away from their God and to bow down to idols, to the gods of the nations around them. And God gets angry at this. So he sends the armies of these nations against Israel to attack them in war. And the Israelites, well, they cry out to their God, groaning under their oppression. But God is a gracious God. So he raises up judges for them, hero warrior-like figures to save them. But Israel's not content with this. They want something more. They want a king. But what sort of king? Well, turning to our first Bible reading for today, 1 Samuel chapter 8. During the time of the last judge of Samuel, the people of Israel come together. And they are unhappy with the present judge, Samuel and his sons, because they know that Samuel and his sons, or Samuel's sons at least, are corrupt. And they don't want them taking over. So, in verse 5, the people say to Samuel, "You are old, and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." Appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. This might seem like a reasonable request, but can you see what a tragedy their words are? See, they want a king, not the royal Messiah. They want a king just like the nations around them. These are the people that God had separated them out from. Israel was to be a holy nation. They were to be separated to him as his people. And to ask for a king from the other nations, well, that's to reject their God, to stand against him as their rightful ruler. So why do they do it? Why do they ask for this? Well, the people, they're motivated out of a desire to find their security in a human king rather than in their God. You see, they believe that this king will come and he'll conquer all their enemies and they'll be safe and secure and they'll prosper and live and be happy. They don't want anything to do with God and what he wants and his commands. No, they just want to be happy, secure. And it's quite easy for us to slip into the same temptation today. See, just like the Israelites, we want stability and security. But the question is, where do we look for such things? Where do we look for our security? Well, along with the Israelites, we look to our leaders, our government. We want them to provide us with security, and you can see it in the interests we have in the economic credentials of our government. See, the economy is so important for us, and it's what can deliver us security, and our government needs to be able to do that. So when we vote for our political parties, well, what's important is their economic credentials. Not worrying about where they stand on abortion or homosexual relationships. For our desire is for stability and prosperity. And when our security is threatened, well, we go up in arms, crying out to our government to avert such a crisis. And you don't have to look too much further than the recent crisis with the refugees. As wave after wave came to our shores, invading our land, we cried out to the government. We prayed for their help to save us. Because our security is threatened. Our comfort is not going to be enough for these people. But I'm here to tell you today that that's not where we're going to find our security. Israel didn't, and we won't, for our security can only be found in God. He is the only one who can give it to us. He is the only one who can give us prosperity and true happiness. For that is who he is. So when we have a refugee crisis, we don't pray to our government. No, we pray to our God. And he provides to us. And his provision, well, it's not limited to a solution to the refugee crisis. No, he provides us a royal Messiah. A royal king who will be nothing like the nations around us. See, Deuteronomy chapter 17 tells us what this king will be like. He will come as one who will fear the Lord. And when he sits upon his throne, he will have the book of God's law sitting under his arm. When he sits down, it will not stay closed, but he will open that book and he will read it. For this is a king who will make every decision according to God's law. Now this is the royal Messiah, not some military conqueror. But in 1 Samuel chapter 8, Israel asked for a king just like the nations. They didn't want a king who feared the Lord. And so what does God do? Well, he gives them exactly what they wanted. He tells them in verse 22, tells to Samuel, listen to them, give them a king. And then in the next chapter, we encounter who this king will be. It's Saul. And have a look at how he's described, how wonderful he looks. We are told that Kish had a son named Saul, an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites, a head taller than any of the others. Big, impressive, powerful man. This is who Israel wanted, one who would lead them. And so Samuel anoints him and appoints him as king. So is this the royal Messiah that is to come? Well, Saul, he has some great victories over Israel's enemies. He crushes them, in fact. But it doesn't take long for the true colours of this king to be revealed. See, God tells him to go to the Amalekites and to completely destroy them. These were a people who went out and fought against Israel on their way to the promised land. So God says to Saul, go and punish them. Saul goes off, he fights them and he conquers them. But you see, God had commanded Saul to completely destroy them, everything, the whole nation, even their livestock. But what does Saul do? Well, keeps the king alive, keeps some of the cattle. I mean, Israel could have done with some of those nice lambs. Keeps everything that's good. He comes back and God says to him, what have you done? What have you done? Now this is one act of disobedience in a long chain for King Saul. So he is not the royal Messiah. Which means we need to keep looking to the future. We need to keep looking for this man who is to come, who will bring blessing and judgment, who will rule to the four corners of the earth. And thankfully, we can turn to the New Testament. And in our passage today, we read words, thy hope stirred your heart. We heard about an angel who came to Zechariah in the temple. And he came to Zechariah to give him a great message, a wonderful message. He tells him and his wife that he will have a child. But this will be no ordinary child. For in verse 17, we learn that this child will prepare the way for the Lord. He will prepare the way for the Lord. Who is the Lord? Is this the royal Messiah? Is this the one who will finally arrive and come and deliver God's people? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But I want to leave you with a question. Are you desperately longing for this king to come? Are you looking for him?
Are you seeking him? Because he is God's king.